And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Amick.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial your one with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast. This is Sam Amick, national writer at The Athletic for the NBA. Here, as always, we got Anthony Slater on the West Coast, regular of the show. The other regular who we have missed dearly out on the East Coast. Not only are we welcoming back the great Fred Katz, we're welcoming back the great Fred Katz with a new job title. Freddie, what's up, brother?
What's going on? A lot is up. So many things are up. I'm in a new city, new job. But I still get to talk to you guys, so the best of everything.
We love you. We appreciate you. Give us the breakdown, and we're going to, you know, merge this into today's discussion for sure and talk about the new squad that you're covering. You Wizards for how many years on the
I was on the Washington Wizards beat for 3 years.
Okay. Obviously coming out of the Norman transcript, previous to that covering the Thunder. Now your third NBA team that you're covering is?
Well, don't forget about my Rasheed Wallace Hawks-like stint covering the Celtics.
Oh, baby. How long was that?
That was a
month.
I think I broke the record for the longest you can. I at the very least had to tie the record for the longest you can cover a team without actually covering one of their games.
Which was how long?
I started the Monday after they got eliminated from the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals. And my last day was the Friday before media day. So I covered the 2018 offseason for about 3 months, and then I took the Wizards job. And now I'm covering the Knicks of New York.
The Knickerbockers.
Of what,
arguably
of Westchester, right, Fred?
The Knicks of more of Westchester than of New York. I'm up in Westchester every single day at that practice facility.
So that drive is how long?
For me, from where I am in the city, it's like 45 minutes without traffic, but it's New York City. So
9 hours traffic with traffic.
It's about 10 hours and 23 minutes on average, which is fine. You know, that's both ways. So it's really five hours and a little over. It's fine.
So we talked about this offline. Does every Knicks beat writer, you have to have a car, right? Most folks in New York City try to avoid having wheels, but does every Knicks beat writer, you think, actually have to own a car?
Yes. I am the only Knicks beat writer that lives in the city, I think.
Okay.
And most Knicks players don't live in the city. Most of the players live out in the suburbs because it's more convenient with the practice facility being outside of the city as well, which is for those who don't know, not common. I mean, you know, most of the time the practice facility is very close to the arena.
Sure.
And you keep them, you know, even in
there's teams that have them in the arena. I cover the Warriors. Theirs is in their arena. And I think that's becoming more common because of the convenience.
The really inconvenient one, which has since been solved, is right when the Nets moved to Brooklyn, they finished Barclays and were ready to move to Brooklyn before they had built their new practice facility in Brooklyn. So there was a little window there where the Nets had already moved from Jersey to Brooklyn, but their practice facility was still in East Rutherford, New Jersey. And so they had to play in Brooklyn and then practice in another state. And that was extremely inconvenient for those players and everybody around the team. I'm I'm sure. But now they're in Brooklyn and their facility is pretty close to their arena, so they're fine.
All right, brother. Well, congrats on the job change. We're excited for you. We're going to get into a lot of Knicks stuff today. Here's what we got on the show, and it's coming together nicely as we just have a new guest here that I'm going to bring in a quick second. We're going to try to make the rounds, not the entire league by any means, but each of us is going to pick a couple teams to analyze, examine, discuss. But before we get to that, we want to be a little more topical. We have the one and only John Krasinski on with us right now, coming at you from Minnesota. John had a good piece today with Kelly Eco, our Rockets beat writer, on Ben Simmons, which is officially, you know, the Ben Simmons saga is the thing that even on a podcast like this, I feel like we're going to have to mention it at least, you know, every single time until it's resolved. It's one of those situations. But John and Kelly had a smart angle where they decided, you know, to take a step back from a macro point of view and examine what happens with these teams with superstars that decide that they don't want to play for that franchise, but then also decide to be around their team and be uncomfortable around their team and just the human experience for everybody involved. How do you get through that? And as it relates to Ben and the Sixers, you know, what impact or what part might that play if he decides to come back? John, we always love having you on, brother. This is normally it's all T-Wolves all the time. This is through the Jimmy Butler lens, obviously, in your experience covering that situation. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Sam. Thanks for having me. Yeah, this was a fun one to work on with Kelly, trying to get different angles and things. And of course, Kelly lived the James Harden situation last year, and I lived the Jimmy Butler divorce a couple years back. And so it seemed like kind of fun to put our brains together and talk to people about, you know, what's life like in this incubator that the Sixers are in right now. And so there was some pretty revealing stuff in there.
No, it was good. And for the quick update, if anybody hadn't been tracking it, you know, if you go back to early last week, I had reported when it comes to Ben, the way that he sees the situation, specifically Joel Embiid, that, you know, I guess the line that got the most play was that dynamic and that duo had run its course through Ben's, you know, perspective. And that was a little more, I mean, listen, I was a little struck by the reaction, but I guess it makes sense. It was more on the nose, if you will, than the previous stance of, I don't want to play for the Sixers anymore. Joel had a lot to say in response, and a lot of it was very sound rationale and his feeling that a lot of the roster decisions for the Sixers last couple of years had been with Ben's strength and weaknesses in mind. So
including the Jimmy Butler one, you know, to just kind of tie it all back together. And that to me is the one that does seem like a pivot point for them, right? Just that because right now, who would you rather have? You know, if you were choosing between the two.
Well, it's also Slater, to your point, like the thing, just being honest as a reporter, like I love it when subjects start getting honest, right? When they stop playing that, like this was the thing nobody wanted to say out loud for a couple of years.
But and Joel Sam Amick's reporting made him say it.
That was not how I was framing that. But like, yeah, like it's just, this is kind of something we knew. The Jimmy Butler leaves Philly subplot had always been a little strange because nobody, again, really wanted to say, well, Ben needs the ball and Jimmy's taking all the big shots in the fourth quarter along with Joe, and that doesn't really work for Ben's ego, if we're being honest. And so, you know, we learned a little bit about that. But again, John, you and Kelly, you kind of just brought people in. You talked to a lot of front office folks, former players, and people who, you know, obviously had to be anonymous to be honest and candid. But what did you learn through the reporting and writing of that story?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we always see in these situations is at the outset of it, when, you know, Jimmy Butler first requests a trade, when Ben Simmons, it's first reported that he's not showing up to camp, things like that. You always see the team say, well, we're just going to focus on the guys that are here. We can make this work. We hope that in the long term we can get our disgruntled star back on the same page. And oh, by the way, we're not going to be pressured into some kind of a bad deal for pennies on the dollar while we do it. We can ride this out. We're not going to let it distract us. We're not going to let it get to us in any way. But what talking to executives and players who have gone through this in other situations say, like, you can have all these best laid plans. Like, you can say to yourself, we're not going to let this get to us, but it's a whole nother world once the media starts descending on you and asking you every single day about your star who's not there or who is there and is trying to make things difficult. Once teammates start to kind of think about, hey, maybe Ben Simmons isn't the only one that's going to be traded here. Maybe I'm going to be going out. Once agents try to get involved and try to figure out where their players are going to be and keep everyone on the same track. Like, there are so many pressures that are involved: ownership, corporate sponsors, if a team's name is being dragged through the mud, like if it's getting really ugly, fans obviously get really upset. And so it kind of just, we tried to paint the picture of, okay, what's the actual reality? You can say all you want about this is not going to be a big deal, we're not going to let it get in the way, and we want, you know, Ben to come back and all this, but what is the actual reality with it? And what these folks said is that in reality, it's really hard to concentrate on the game, to not get caught up in it, and not to just get aggravated when every single media availability is Ben related, is Jimmy related, is, you know, is James Harden related. And so it really does wear on people when you're in the middle of it.
What's it do to the feeling? Because, I mean, you, I like that there's a situation in Philadelphia, by the way, which is so much drama around a particular player who doesn't play for the Timberwolves. And John is like, oh, I've got experience in this.
This is me.
Yep. Let me handle this. I know drama. What did you notice, though, from the front office perspective? Because obviously, in retrospect, like that, the Jimmy Butler situation was kind of the most famous point of a series of points, which led to an entire turnover inside the Timberwolves organization, right? So when that kind of stuff happens in an organization, I know there is immediately some kind of uneasiness that goes throughout the entire organization because people are worried about themselves as well, right? So what was your perspective of seeing that when you were covering it?
Yeah, it was really interesting, Fred, because for in the Jimmy situation with Minnesota, Tom Thibodeau was the president of basketball operations and the head coach at the time. And he, I think, knew deep down, like, he had to find a way to try to convince Jimmy to stay. I think the Rockets kind of eventually begrudgingly came to the acknowledgement, okay, we got to move James Harden. I think the Sixers, even though they say no, they know that they'll eventually have to move Ben and move on from this. But for Tibbs, it was as soon as Jimmy is traded, then all of a sudden your hold on this job really becomes tenuous. And so there was a period of time that was quite a while, actually, throughout the summer and then even throughout training camp and into the season, where Tom Thibodeau believed that there was some way, if we just keep going forward, if we just get him on the court and just keep playing, that things will eventually work out and he'll change his mind and want to stay. Now, those who know Jimmy Butler say that was never going to happen, but that was kind of the dynamic that they were trying to work through. And while that is happening, then you have other people in the organization saying, man, Tibbs, this ain't it. Like, you got to change your perspective on this. We got to figure out a way to find an exit strategy that works for us and isn't as painful. And Tibbs just really did dig in and try to hold the fort. And that's how you get to a point in middle of November where they had lost five games in a row. They're out in Sacramento as Sam was out there with them. And they
never
reached
forget
a point.
That.
Yep. They reached a point of no return. And all of a sudden you're taking Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and Jared Bayless for one of the 10 to 12 best players in the league with no first round picks. So that's kind of the, you know, I know Daryl Morey has said, well, we want Ben Simmons back. We want him back. Joel Embiid is saying the same thing. One of the executives in my piece said, you do not want him to come back. Like, right. That's the worst possible scenario, because that only increases the pressure, makes it even messier and even harder to kind of extricate yourself from it.
Well, and here's my understanding on the Simmons front. There has been some reporting elsewhere that I think Ramona Shelburne at ESPN had said that the Simmons camp is, quote, in it for the long haul. And so they're kind of putting the messaging out that he'll be willing to continue losing money. You know, that $8.25 million payment the other day didn't come his way, although also reporting that eventually he'll probably get that back. I pushed pretty hard in the process of reporting the piece last week to get clarity on his plan going forward. And it was not told definitively that there's no way he will return. Instead, what I was told was that it was essentially, if he does, and this, you know, this kind of dovetails perfectly into your piece, John, is that, first of all, it's just kind of a very clear message of you're not going to get a guy who is mentally engaged. You're not going to get a guy who is invested. Even like distinctions between, well, of course he would talk to his teammates because he cares about teammates in general. But, you know, the inference was like, good luck getting communication with anybody else. Now, he and Elton Brand have a good relationship. That's the, I think, the one connection point he still has with the franchise. Beyond that, I don't think there's any loyalties anywhere. So you're dead on. I think if he did end up deciding to come back just for the sake of the money, then it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to, you know, potentially derail the Sixers season. They can still win a lot of games without Ben Simmons. It also, and this is not going to become the Jimmy Butler pod, but man, John, you're bringing me back from a memory standpoint. You know, you talk about that word, just, you know, uncomfortable, discomfort. I mean, I wasn't even there every day like you were. When they rolled through Sacramento, you walk in that locker room, and again, this is literally the night that Jimmy gets traded to Philly. You know, you go try to talk to other guys on the team in a casual kind of way, and it's like, you know, going to a friend's house, and you can pick up on the fact that he and his wife are fighting or something. You know what I mean? It's like you're trying to talk to people and they're just looking around like, yeah, this ain't the time, bro. Yeah. You know, it was really uncomfortable. And then as an aside, this still blows me away. I think I might have said this on the pod before, like, John, that interview that I did with Jimmy the night he got traded, learning after the fact that he gave a candid, long Q&A about his situation while already knowing that he had been traded, which he certainly did not share with me at the time, was fairly epic. You know, he sat there acting like this thing wasn't a wrap and he was basically packing bags for Philly. He admitted that to me, I don't know, a couple months after the fact, because I had heard it elsewhere. So yeah, I mean, it's uncomfortable. It does make for good copy. You know what I mean? It gives us something to talk about. And if Ben comes back to camp, that's why they shouldn't want it, right? Is because it's just going to restart the entire news cycle. It will not be about their season.
Well, the thing, do we think Ben Simmons is built like that at all? I mean, like, Jimmy Butler lives in the uncomfort, right? Like, he was, right. I mean, you're mentioning it right there. He probably enjoyed telling you, like, ha-ha, like, I know I've had the locker room like that. And even James Harden, who's not quite built Jimmy Butler style, like, he's a little bit less like that. Like, he got really out of shape and then was half-assing it in regular season games that they were playing. And he was, like, throwing the ball and, like, walking over to the other side of the court.
No, he had a full ass at that point, I'm just going to say.
If Ben Simmons, I don't think personality-wise, is about to come back and just, you know, certainly he's not going to Jimmy Butler it. I mean, John was there, like, just, like, take over the gym and just, like, really take over the team's personality at that point. And then if, you know, I don't know when he's thinking about maybe coming back and trying to, you know, one-up it and get it even more uncomfortable. But if Philly starts the season, like, I don't know, 5-2 and Maxey's had, like, a couple 20-point games, they might be sitting there, like, feeling kind of good about themselves, too. I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure Simmons will be able to create the situation that Butler or Harden did.
One thing I will say, Sam, just getting back on your point of, like, they might not want him to come back, and the point that you made in your story, John, the difference with Simmons and the other guys is that from a basketball perspective, and what complicates this, Simmons is at basically his lowest value since he came into the league right now after what happened in the postseason. So there's this weird juxtaposition where from an emotional and from a, like, a off the court team building perspective, maybe you don't want him to come back because it just makes things so uncomfortable. And unless you have people who thrive in the uncomfortable, like, say, Jimmy Butler, nobody else is going to enjoy that situation. It could just turn into a miserable emotional situation for your team. But that being said, I don't know if you're Philly. Like, I was somewhat skeptical of Philly trading Simmons right away. I'm talking, like, right after the playoffs, because I figured the last taste in the rest of the league's mouth right now is seeing Simmons give up open dunks in the playoffs and just looking like a guy who was talented, but even more flawed than the people who thought he was flawed already thought, you know? And they needed to find some kind of way to recover that value and getting people think, like, okay, he's an all-star again. This is a guy who we can still build around and make one of our two pieces on a winning team. So there's that other side of it too, where it's like, they might have to recover some of his basketball value too. And it's difficult to toe that line because you're kind of messing up one of them either way.
Well, yeah. Sorry, just real quickly on that. And the thing that makes this also different from Rockets and Timberwolves is the Sixers are trying to win a title, you know, while they're doing all of this. And so like that, I think the Rockets knew when they traded Harden, we're blowing it up. We're starting over. We're playing for picks. The Wolves tried to kind of hold on, but they knew in essentially when Jimmy left that their chances of being a factor in the West were out of it. The Sixers are going to try to do all of this, whether they bring Simmons back or not, and try and maximize Embiid's window. And so that's what just adds a whole nother layer to all of the tension that is going to be permeating that whole locker room, that whole organization.
I would follow. Here's my thing there, John. First of all, like, it's fool's gold for them to continue thinking they're contending for a title right now, because it's not like Ben's not going to be happy and change his stance and be there. Ben happy, Ben fitting into what they have. Yeah, then they are for sure. But if I was Ben as this staring contest continues, you know what would worry me is that, you know, we haven't even mentioned the central character who took part in the Rocket situation and is now heading up the Philly situation, Daryl Morey. You know, obviously he was, you know, with Philly at the time of the Harden trade, but, and I know Daryl very well. If I'm Ben, here's what worries me. In terms of a possible trade happening and Daryl finally being compelled to get a deal done, to have a player or players that excite him enough to put Ben in a new jersey, in a new city. Daryl has spent the last, you know, several years, 5, 6, 7 years, around some of the best players in the history of the game. And I think he has got a very high standard for guys who get him excited. And all the deals that I continue to hear about as realistic possibilities for Ben Simmons are just the type of thing that make Daryl Morey shrug his shoulders. And other than Damian Lillard, which we've talked about before on the show, that's clearly his dream prospect, I don't know where a deal gets done, because I feel like all these other things are not moving the needle at all, given, you know, what he wants. You could argue that some of them would put them in an okay spot, but in terms of star power, which is what he's grown accustomed to, it's just not there.
That's why you wait. That's why you wait until the season, because situations unsettle. The Blazers start poorly. The Warriors start poorly. Something happens that can unsettle another situation. And again, right, as we talk about the differences between the Rockets situation with Harden and the Wolves situation with Butler, is I think Philly has enough talent, particularly with Embiid, an MVP candidate, to sustain for a month or two to be, you know, in there. I agree with you. They're not obviously a title contender with no Ben Simmons, no return for Ben Simmons, but they could be the 4 seed, the 5 seed in the East for a month or two. And then maybe come January, the Warriors are desperate. The Blazers are desperate. Lillard's like, I don't, you know, like this situation here, or something like that. And that is where that's really Morey's last play. To me, I've said it on this podcast before. To me, February trade deadline is his deadline.
Well, and that's the risk, Slater. You're right. You're totally right about that. Here's the only risk involved there is I've talked to a ton of people around the league. And I tried to get into it in this story a little bit, but more macro is everyone in the wrong league says, if there's any executive in the entire NBA who can shut out all the media, you know, hype, all of the drama, all of the outside noise, and endure kind of a standoff like this, it's Daryl Morey. Like, he has the stomach to be able to do this. What you find, though, in these situations is the longer it goes on, you all of a sudden, Tibbs was the most stubborn person in the history of stubborn people. And like, he really wanted to dig in on Jimmy Butler. Like, he really wanted to say, no, we're not doing it. But the longer it goes on, that's the key, Slater. They, like, the Sixers have to have success.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you don't, if you stumble out of the gates, if you're 1-4, then Embiid gets involved. Then Doc Rivers gets involved. Then your ownership gets involved. And all of a sudden, it's taken out of your hands.
Yeah, their record early in the season is probably the most important record in the league.
No doubt.
Well, and you know, the Damian situation, we talked offline before jumping on the pod today about his situation a little bit. You know, our Blazers beat writer Jason Quick had a good piece kind of giving the updated landscape on Dame and how he sees things. And for now, as they go into the, you know, this is the optimistic season for everybody, his tone has certainly changed from the offseason. He talks about wanting to persevere through tough times. And this is how his entire life has been. And he's now kind of reapplying that ethos to the Portland situation. But Slater, to your point, that's for now. And if you're Daryl, you know, maybe you do wait it out and see if the Blazers start under 500, see if Dame does kind of restart this conversation. In the absence of that, you know, if I'm handicapping, I think Ben continues to stay away, continues to lose boatloads of money and just waits to see what happens, because he's not, you hit on it earlier, Slater, the difference in personality between James and Jimmy and Ben. Ben is in what you would describe as like a very, it's kind of a sheepish time for Ben, right? Like there's so much focus on his deficiencies as a player. You're coming back in that locker room as the guy who had a terrible finish to the postseason. You don't have the swagger that James Harden and Jimmy Butler had. Those two dudes looked around and it was basically like, no, you can't handle me and everything I come with. I'm so incredible and you guys can't keep up. I mean, that was almost the thread between those two guys, and that's not the case with Ben.
You don't think he's going to come back and yell at everyone in the locker room and then sit down with Sam Amick for a big Q&A and just...
Or call Rachel Nichols in, you know, to do a scripted appearance on the Jump.
Don't forget, he's going to beat the starters. Start screaming. The thing I never understood... The thing I never understood about Jimmy Butler playing with the third stringers and beating the starters is when he reportedly turned to Minnesota management and started screaming, you need me, which is the exact opposite message that he was trying to convey in getting traded.
He should have come in and got his ass kicked.
No sense.
Right?
He should have been saying, he should have come in and got his ass kicked by the starters and been like, you don't need me. Look at the starters.
Robert Covington is a much better glue guy than me.
Like, if Jimmy Butler, just give it to him. I'm Tibbs and Jimmy Butler starts screaming, you need me, I'd be like, I know. That's what I've been telling you.
That's right. You just made my point for me.
All right, guys, we're going to segue. And my last thought on this note before we take a quick break and change topics is, and again, I keep going down memory lane. Johnny, like, okay, the night that Jimmy gets traded, and you know these stories, but like our friend and colleague, Bill Oram, Lakers beat writer, was in town for a Lakers Kings game that was, I think, the next night, right? So he's already in SAC and he texts me and says, hey, a couple of us LA media folks are grabbing a beer at a hotel near the Kings Arena. Do you want to come say hello? To this day, I'm so happy that Bill, you know, unknowingly pulled me into this space. I go to the Citizen Hotel in downtown Sacramento to just say hello to them for a minute before going home. And in the corner is former Wolves GM Scott Layden. And Scott has it's not even an AirPod. He's going old school with the wire and he's got the earpiece in. And it's a crowded bar. You know, I don't know what night it was, but pretty crowded bar. People getting after it. But in the corner, was it Friday? Yeah. In the corner, you know, all by his lonesome and just, you know, far enough away that the noise wasn't bothering him, was Scott Layden, unbeknownst to me, working the phones and finalizing this deal with Philly. And to this day, I've never felt more awkward because I had seen Scott at the game already. I'd already kind of done that thing where you say hello, and now I can tell he's on the phone, but I don't want to be rude. So I give it just one of these awkward waves. Hi, Scott. How you doing, Scott? Waving at him, and he just kind of shoots me this look like, yo, I'm busy here. You know what I mean? And little did we know, they were getting that thing done. We'll see where the Simmons thing lands. Now, great perspective there. After the break, we're going to stay on here with John, and we are rewriting the script because he's bringing so much to the show. You've had a lot of stuff going on in Minnesota lately, brother, with the T-Wolves and all the upheaval. So we'll get into that after this break here.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, we are back. We appreciate John Krasinski giving us a little OT work here. Johnny, you are not only the Ben Simmons Harden expert, and your team in Minnesota, we kind of joked about you being the captain of drama. The Jimmy Butler is one thing. This story that you were all over with Shams Charania, I guess now 10 days ago or so, and the upheaval in the front office, Gerson Rosas, of course, has seen an end to his short tenure. Sachin Gupta is taking over, and the kind of the future remains, and you can help us add clarity, but, you know, somewhat uncertain if he's going to head up the front office, you know, for the foreseeable future. But the bigger picture here, of course, is just continued changes, continued off court situations that just don't help this squad. Karl Anthony Towns is quickly becoming the guy that is a hell of a player and who's not going to accomplish anything collectively other than that one playoff appearance, because everything around him has been in shambles. And certainly on a personal side, he's been through hell and back. I don't know exactly where to start, but I guess I'll start here. A few weeks back, I think this is fair to share. As always, you're always all over everything in Minnesota, and you had given me a shout, and like we do oftentimes, wanted to talk through different things you were hearing and material. And you saw this coming from a mile away. You knew that around Gerson, there was a lot of frustration and a lot of negativity when it comes to the culture that I know that's an overused word, but it's a real thing that folks were not feeling him in terms of his the way that he was leading their group, and that something might at some point break here. You were, jump in if I'm getting this wrong, but you were kind of, you know, there's a lot of downplaying of the substance and how serious it was. And obviously that was not the case. And so when the move happened, you were incredibly well positioned to write a great piece on the behind the scenes kind of machinations. But take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, like you said, Sam, like really starting, I think I would say in Summer League in Vegas, there started to be a lot of kind of chatter around the league about some people in the Timberwolves front office who were unhappy, just some general discontent with how things were going under Gerson Rosas, with his leadership style, with kind of just the environment all around. One of the things that is kind of Shakespearean is that Sachin Gupta had an offer from the Houston Rockets earlier on in the summer, and to go there and be the number two in Houston for a pay raise. And Gerson Rosas blocked that move because it was a lateral move, and it was right before kind of draft and free agency and all those things. And so they felt that it wasn't the right thing for the Timberwolves to let him go do that. There were definitely other cases throughout the front office of just disenchantment with Gerson Rosas. And so I had several people around the league come up to me in Vegas and say, hey, you better start looking into this because it sounds like there's a lot of rumblings. And so I did follow up with it. I did look into it, and there were definitely, you know, more than a handful of people on Gerson Rosas' staff who were not happy with how things are going. Really started to pursue that heavily as we got into September. And as you know, then I started to get some pushback as well from other people saying, hey, look, a lot of people around the league are unhappy right now. The pandemic, we've been working for 2 years straight. People are angsty and they're at each other's throats. There's also a lot of pressure on this particular organization because there's a new ownership group coming in. And so people are feeling it. And so there were some worthwhile, I think, rebuttals to some of the complaints, but I knew it wasn't going away. And so I was continuing to pursue it, and even got to the point of discussing it with Gerson Rosas on the record, you know, and just kind of getting his replies to some of the evidence that I was presenting to him. But as we were kind of getting closer to getting ready to publish a story that kind of really encapsulated the entire drama behind the scenes, then Gerson Rosas is abruptly fired. Shams and I, and the reporting that we've done is that, you know, that the ownership grew increasingly concerned about the environment and the culture inside the front office. But then also he had an inappropriate relationship with another married coworker that was making a lot of people uncomfortable as well. And so that just was kind of, I think, the straw that broke the camel's back, if you want to say. And so they decided to move on and elevate Sachin Gupta just to, you know, the Mount Rushmore of Timberwolves dysfunction is a very difficult mountain to get to. But this one goes right on, right belongs right near the top of it. It was quite a 10-day period there for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, you talk about Sachin Gupta and the what if scenarios even of his life and his career. I mean, he was trying to be the Kings GM, mm-hmm. and that job ultimately went to Monty McNair. The Rockets opportunity, correct me if I'm wrong, was essentially the identical positioning within the front office, but it included a significant raise. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yes.
To which it's funny. I talked to someone else around the league, fairly high stature, about this story, and they had said, and I think folks would generally agree, they had said, listen, you know, you just can't F with people's money. Like, that was one thing that I think is part of the discussion, because at face value, you say, well, he wasn't even getting elevated. If it's a lot more cash, you know, and I do understand at the time, I think Gerson's reasoning he had said was that you're going through the draft and there's somewhat proprietary information and intel that you don't want to go with that employee to the other team. But, you know, it didn't end well for him. I wonder, let's take it this direction. You got this new ownership group coming in with Mark Loren and Alex Rodriguez. How have they processed this entire situation? Because it's, hey, welcome to the NBA. You're now in the middle of a not a very positive story.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, it's interesting because they have bought in 20% of the franchise under Glenn Taylor. And the plan is over the next 2 years to get to a majority control. But they technically are not majority owners. So they're just kind of underlings to Glenn Taylor right now. But given all of the context of their plans to eventually become majority owners, they have essentially rolled up their sleeves and really done a deep dive into the organization, into the culture, into what needs to be fixed, what needs to be changed. And a lot of their discussions with employees during the last several months, these kinds of themes have continued to emerge with them and really got on their front burner and said, wow, you know, there are really some real problems here that we need to address. And so in many ways, they are being kind of not drivers of the decision-making here, but certainly playing big roles in the decision-making process and in kind of maybe opening Glenn Taylor's eyes to a little bit more of what they're hearing behind the scenes, because they're just having a much closer look to what's going on in a much fresher perspective. So they are playing big roles in this. They're being very active and they are front and center in some of the decisions that are getting made and will continue to be going forward, whether it's future leadership, whether it's trades, whether it's, you know, all these things. They're trying to set things up so when they take over fully, it's a seamless transition.
Do you see, and guys jump in as always, whenever you feel like it, but in terms of setting the stage here, do you see more changes coming? You know, you got Sachin heading it up. There's been some reporting that ownership has a previous relationship with Elton Brand. Mm-hmm. You know, there is some chatter around the league that you know, this is not ultimately how it's going to look. What do you think there?
Well, there's certainly, I think, a belief around the league that these two new owners very much want to make a splash and make kind of their own high profile, kind of send a message around the league that this, you know, kind of small mom and pop shop is no longer being run the same way and they're going to do things differently. That said, Sam, they have made it clear to Sachin Gupta that this is his job right now and there is not going to be an immediate search that is taking place. They want to get a little bit of stability, to let Sachin do the job and see how he goes. He does have a really good relationship with Mark Lowry, especially. And so they're going to let him kind of grow in it and they're going to monitor it closely. Because one of the things that they're working through right now is both Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez are not NBA guys. So they're really trying to figure out the whole landscape of the thing. Yes, they know Elton Brand. They have a few other relationships around the league, just kind of in bumping into people, but to kind of, you know, really execute a quality search, learn all the candidates, really learn what you have in Sachin Gupta and in this entire organization, that's going to take some time. And so I don't think that there's going to be anything immediate that goes into play here. They want to monitor what Sachin does and then also really get a better idea of what their options are before they make any decisions one way or the other on that.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about how this situation is on the Mount Rushmore of Timberwolves drama. And then moving forward with it, we're like, you know what? Let's add A-Rod to the mix.
Yeah.
Because that's going to stifle this down. That's just like taking Diet Coke and just tossing the entire pack of Mentos in there. And then you're just good to go. I'm curious about Sachin because he has a reputation for being this very smart guy with an analytics background. He is the bit of trivia that always gets brought up with him is that he's the guy who created the ESPN trade machine. And I tweeted that out the other week, and all of these real GM stands came after me saying the real GM had a trade machine before ESPN.
All right.
Don't care. He didn't create that one. He created the ESPN one.
Right.
And you know, he's been with Philly. He's been with Houston, right?
Yep.
Detroit. And then he's been under Rosas. So he's worked with a number of different analytics forward organizations as well. How much is that going to be part of their philosophy moving forward? And I know Rosas kind of had a background in that as well, coming from Houston. But how much of that is going to be a part of their process moving forward under him? And do you see kind of their player evaluation process changing at all with the changeover?
Yeah, it will be interesting because you're right, Fred, in terms of like Gerson Rosas, even though he came from Houston and certainly was steeped in analytics and educated in it, he came from more of a scouting background. He was more of just kind of the pro personnel scout and the guy who beat the bushes in Europe looking for talent and things like that. Sachin is definitely more on the numbers side of things. And so I do think that there were probably some people in the organization who believed that maybe some of the intel and the homework that they were doing wasn't exactly kind of hitting home with Gerson Rosas. And I think that they will get a more willing ear with Gupta. But I also do think that Gupta is very kind of cognizant of the characterization of especially process Sixers guys, that it's, you know, or Daryl Morey, you know, is that it's, they're all just numbers on a page. It's zeros and ones. And let's just kind of get there. Like he does want to kind of, you know, really make the human element part of it. And that's where I think that the difference going forward with this new Timberwolves regime is going to be. In the past, under Gerson Rosas, he was the voice. He was out front. He was not bashful. He was very much kind of the spokesman of the organization. I think Gupta is quieter. He is much more of a listener. And so I think Chris Finch, the coach, is going to be a little bit more of the voice going forward, just for the basketball part of things. And he's going to have an even greater role in evaluation, in kind of, you know, looking at other players around other teams and things like that, that will play a bigger role in determining what kind of moves are being made in this organization in the near term and really for the next probably season at least.
Is Gupta just going to be judged on if he can get Ben Simmons to Minnesota or not?
Well, that's the problem, or that's his challenge, I would say, right? Slater is like, he knows, even though he doesn't have the interim tag, he knows he's essentially an interim guy. And so if you want to, do you make the decisions that you think are best for the organization or the one that's going to get you the job? Because I do know ownership is very bullish on Ben Simmons. They're very intrigued by the idea of adding him to Towns, Edwards.
A-Rod wants a splash, baby. Exactly, A-Rod wants a splash.
And so, but like if they do add him and they make the playoffs, I mean, that's a pretty good step forward. Now, if they add him and it blows up, well, then, you know, they're going to go their separate ways. But I do think that it's up to Gupta to do enough to make sure that he can say what exactly a front office philosophy looks like with Gupta in charge. He's got to make some moves, whether it's Simmons or others, that show how he differentiates from Gerson Rosas and why they should keep him.
John, what would your kind of informed speculation be about a possible Simmons deal? It's obviously not close enough right now to make something happen. We're not hearing anything about traction, progress, but it does seem like, at least if you talk about active talks, they have been far more active than other teams. What might that look like?
Yeah, so they want to get in. I think that, you know, Simmons' value around the league is pretty low, but the Wolves are bullish. They want to be at the head of this table. What they're hoping for, they know that they don't have the pieces to give Daryl Morey that are immediately going to help him win a championship. And so the hope is that maybe if Daryl Morey gets pressed into a corner, maybe he would take a draft pick heavy package from the Wolves and then use some of those picks to later on down the line to go get a Damian Lillard, a Bradley Beal, whoever the next disgruntled star is that says, I want out. Now, Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns are really the only two that are completely off the table in talks. I think everyone else is available. They would probably rather keep Russell, but if they got to make a move to do it, I think in the end they would. Jaden McDaniels is a piece that people like. And then a Timberwolves draft picks, as Slater knows, are more valuable on the open market.
I'm about to go watch one tonight. Jonathan Kuminga making his debut in Portland. I will be watching a Minnesota draft pick.
There you go. Yeah. So that could be it.
What about Kat? I mean, we all know just kind of the influence that franchise centerpieces have in today's league. What's any clarity on his view of Ben and that possible partnership?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I mean, Kat and Ben have gotten along well for a long time. They had a kind of a wrestling match when Kat threw down with Embiid a couple of years ago, but all in all, they're on good terms. And D'Angelo Russell and Ben Simmons went to high school together, so they're good too. So I think that Kat is at a point where whatever can be done to make this team viable, like he's going to essentially be for. He has had 5 head coaches and 6 general managers in his and he's about to start his 7th season.
Crazy.
So he's about done with kind of all of the ifs and whats. So if something can be done that would immediately catapult the Wolves into playoff conversation, I think that he would welcome that.
As I told you the other day when we talked on the phone, I saw one of those former head coaches in San Diego this week. Ryan Saunders was kind of hanging out with the Nuggets and doing what coaches do when they're in between jobs. So great stuff on Minnesota. I think super producer Andrew Schlecht needs one more break out of us. So we're going to go to another quick break, come back, and talk a little bit of Knicks to cap this thing off.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top 3 things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, we're back. Thank you for sticking with us here. John, you are just, this was not by design, as you know. This entire pod came together very late in the process. I decided to freelance at the 11th hour, and lo and behold, happened to pick the guy who has like unique angles on every topic that we're getting into. So Fred Katz and his job change to Knicks beat writer is something we wanted to highlight. Very happy for him. Can't wait to read, you know, his always thorough, deep, candid coverage on the Knickerbockers. But they are coached by one Tom Thibodeau, a guy that you got to know well, who I know well from all these years being around him. He's a character, to say the least. If you've never heard it on our sister pod, the Athletic NBA Show, Jay King's impersonation of Tom Thibodeau is legendary. So there's a lot of Knicks stuff we could get into, but let's start there. Just wise words from one former Thibodeau beat writer to another. What is Fred in for here?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Like, I think people watch him on the court, and I'm sure, you know, Jay does the impressions of eyes, you know, and like, and how volatile he is, and it's volatile. It's nasty. The stuff that comes out of his mouth is unbelievable. But he looks like this really kind of mean, you know, tyrant of a dude. But behind the scenes, like in practices with the media, after games, he's very measured. He is totally cool. He is respectful of the media, but he doesn't give you great answers. Usually sometimes he does, but a lot of times he holds things close to the vest, but he's very generally easy to get along with. On the off chance you can find him in the summer, you know, for a beer or a glass of wine, he's an unbelievable storyteller and an awesome guy to hang out with when he's relaxed. But as the season starts, as the wins and losses come, as that hard shell goes around him, like he does become all business. He's not going to play a lot of games. He's not going to joke and laugh. He's not going to call you off the record and kill some player or some coach or something behind the scenes. He is in his own little world. And I do think like it works so much better in New York than it did here, because he does not have to be the GM and the president of basketball operations. He's got Leon and Wes and Scott Perry and all those guys to do all of the politicking and the baby kissing, and he can just coach. It's the perfect situation for him there.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, they have a good mix of player personalities there too. Like I think with him, I've always been a big believer that we kind of oversimplify the topic when we talk about someone's a good coach, someone's a bad coach, when the reality is almost everyone who is good enough to be an NBA coach is a good coach for some players and a bad coach for other players. Now, I think there are some players, John, as you've seen, who don't respond to tips positively, because that personality can be grating if you don't have the proper personality to receive his coaching the way that he likes to coach. And I know the Knicks have made a very, very concerted effort to bring in Tibbs players, because you see on the other side, there are some guys who are attached to him at the hip, like mm-hmm. Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson, who just absolutely refuse to play for anybody else, apparently. And I think the Knicks have a few guys like that. It seems like Julius Randle has really very proudly become one of those guys. You know, he's talked about the way that Tibbs has affected his work ethic. I'm going to have a story out probably tomorrow about Emmanuel Quickley and about his relationship with Tibbs, and how when Tibbs really gets on him and starts yelling at him, Quickley starts laughing. And I asked Quickley about it, and he said to me, yeah, it's because I love it. I love it when he yells at me like that. It's great. He's just trying to make me better. And you could see his face kind of like lights up. Like unless he is the greatest 20-year-old actor ever, I mean, he really does love it. And so I know the Knicks have made a very concerted effort to bring in those sorts of personalities who respond well to that type of coaching. I think that's probably why they outplayed their expectations last year. I'm sure that's a huge part of it.
Well, and you also, Fred, like I think the mentality of that roster is you had a lot of guys who had been kicked around the league a few times, you know, other than Barrett, but like he received his criticism too. But like, I think the best player for a Tibbs player is someone who has tried it other ways and failed. And so like a lot of those guys were at kind of the point in their career where it's like, all right, I kind of got to listen to this guy and at least try it out, because what else I've done hasn't really worked. And there's a humility, I think, in that roster that responds well to that. And so maybe that wasn't always the case here or in other places, but Derrick Rose put through the ringer for some of his own fault and all those things. But he was at a very low point when Tibbs reached out and gave him another chance in Minnesota. And that kind of thing. So you come in and you're willing to take the criticism or kind of the hard-nosed nature of things, I think, a little bit more than if you've either had a lot of success or you're coming, you know, in as a super high pick with all these expectations and a little bit more ego with it. So I think that plays into it as well.
If your name is Carl Anthony Towns, that's it. Sorry, go ahead.
Not saying, just saying.
It's going to be an interesting year though, because as we know, the book on Tibbs is that, you know, that he grinds on you to the point that year two,
yeah,
becomes even more interesting. Year three, even more so. He's not necessarily shown that ability to have a long runway with some of these teams, even the ones that he's had success with. One of a kind personality. I keep going down memory lane, John. I remember when I had Tibbs on my old podcast at USA Today, and it was in person in Minnesota, sat in his office. To this day, like, the only dude who you had to set up the audio equipment, it was literally like 8 feet from his mouth. Like, his desk was so big that.
Oh, yeah. He's very proud of the office in Minnesota. Best office in the league.
Well, the office, but then just the boom in his voice. It was hilarious. When you listen to the audio, it's as if he was chewing on the microphone and he was 8 feet away. So no problem hearing him. And you do. You hear those calls at Summer League when maybe the gym is quiet and he's just screaming his head off. So we'll see what they do. Freddie, congrats again, man. We're happy for you. New challenge.
Absolutely. Well,
kudos to you for taking it on. That's fantastic, man.
Can't wait. It's going to be fun. First preseason game Tuesday night, so ready to go.
I like it. Johnny, this
the Yankees playoff game against the Red Sox,
baby. Which is
rough. My first question to Tibbs after the game is going to be about Aaron Judge's home run in the second inning. So
magic is in the work, Fred.
Sam, can I? I was feeling a little left out. I just quickly wanted to have another John Krasinski, you know, tangentially related storyline.
Yes.
Just because we talked about it for about 15 minutes last
week. Bonus content. Let's hear it.
Andrew Wiggins was vaccinated.
It's
important news for the Warriors. he will play.
Hold on, Andrew. Can you cut out John's yell right there and make that a regular part of the show? John just yelled like you just had another child.
I just for two reasons: the fact that John's on the podcast, and then also just we talked about it last week, so that issue has been solved.
Yeah, and Slater, like we kind of exchange a couple of messages about this, but like I covered Andrew for six seasons in Minnesota, and when I saw that one appearance with the media, and Janie I think is asking him a few questions, and he's just basically saying, I'm on my time, not yours. And like responding very emphatically, I have never seen Andrew Wiggins care about anything the way that he was in that. He is always the coolest guy in the room. You could not rattle him. He never got upset or anything. He was legit upset there. That was like, I've just never seen it.
Yeah, he was legit upset. In that room, he was legit upset with the Warriors that the news got out. It was kind of a weird time around them. And obviously with everything just going on globally and the fact that San Francisco is probably the most liberal city out there, it all kind of swirled. But issue has been solved for them. They're moving on.
Yeah, John, Andrew did not look as happy as he did that day that you walked by him at the craps table in Vegas during Summer League.
Yeah.
And Fred and Slater, I can't really replicate it, but you should have seen it. Andrew sees Mr. John Krasinski coming down the way and all of a sudden forgets about all the money he has on the table. And there might have been an embrace. Y'all clearly get along pretty well. But
great dude.
Yeah, Wiggins is back in the fold. Maybe next week we'll talk about Mr. Irving out in Brooklyn and what's going to happen there. That one remains undetermined. All right, guys, great stuff. John, thank you again, off the cuff. You gave us a whole lot of time and fantastic insight. Keep up the great work. Thank you to all the listeners, as always, for tuning in. Be good, guys. Thanks, boys. That was great.
Yay!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.